having Xandra Manns come up, followed by Carol Binder.
Morning, I'm Xandra Manns, and I live in Eureka. And I just have a question of clarification about the freshwater tissue plant NPDES permit that was approved last summer, and a group of us appealed it. The appeal was thrown out. And when we inquired of the applicant, we were told that they don't have a permit. When we inquired with your staff, we were told they do have a permit. Do they have a permit, is my question. And the current work that is going on the site, demolishing the plant, is that covered by the permit? Because they certainly are discharging wastewater into the ocean, but understand from the district that no monitoring is taking place. So I just would like some clarification on that question.
Provide us a little insight there.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The NPDES permit has been revoked for the discharge from the plant by this board. The facility still has an industrial stormwater permit to manage stormwater and any incidental discharge from the site. As to any demolition, haven't been aware of it, and I'll follow up on it.
Okay. Good. Thanks.
Thank you.
Carol Binder, followed by Craig Benson.
Well, I was not aware that the permit had been revoked, or I might have drank more coffee this morning. So when was it revoked? Yeah. Well, anyway, that's good news, because we were concerned because there was, as you know, a cease and desist order on the pulp mill, and the deadlines went by, and, you know, it was our concern that the permit was still in effect, and last I heard that Freshwater was paying to maintain this permit, and I was kind of concerned about that. Why would they pay it if they don't have any pulp, they can't make any pulp in the future because the equipment has been removed? And then it came down to the fact that they could release stormwater out the outfall pipe, and that it was not being tested, which was our concern. But that all may be moot if they don't have a permit and they can't do that anymore. And that was really good news. We've been real concerned. There's a demolition going on, as you know. Several buildings have been demolished. If you look out on your way out to lunch or whatever, you'll notice the pulp mill looks very differently. The asbestos has, either in the process of being removed or it has been removed, all of which is very toxic. And I think even the people who are very much fans of the pulp mill would say it has had a very toxic history. So we were just concerned with the cleanup and with checking with stormwater and various things coming out of that mill, because no one seems to be paying any attention to the fact that there is a cleanup going on and a demolition. And usually when there is a cleanup of a toxic site, there is a lot of community input and a lot of concern. And this one, it's just like it dropped from everybody's concern. So anyway, I'm very happy that they don't have a water permit, and pleased that, you know, that happened. So thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Benson, followed by Charles Ciancio.
Good morning to the board and staff. My name is Craig Benson. I'm the Watershed Program Manager with the nonprofit Redwood Community Action Agency here in Eureka. We have a longstanding partnership with the regional board in protecting and restoring beneficial uses of water in many Humboldt County's watersheds through your various grant programs, and we're very grateful for those grant programs. We're currently assisting landowners on several 303D listed sediment turbidity impaired watersheds to help landowners better manage their pollutant loads in these watersheds for certain land use activities, and more specifically in Freshwater Creek, Elk River, and the Mad River. We're working with landowners to put together proactive plans for TMDL compliance. I'd like to bring the board just up to date in this couple of minutes on our Mad River TMDL compliance planning activities. A year ago, we completed the Mad River Watershed Assessment, and this assessment was really a follow-on document to the sediment source analysis conducted by Graham Matthews and Associates and the EPA. We know that document gave us a really good idea of what the background sediment is and what the management-related sediment is and where that sediment is coming from. What the watershed assessment did is it really looked at what land use activities are contributing most to the anthropogenic sources of sediment, and more importantly, where are the sensitive habitats and receptor species for that sediment. So in essence, we added to Graham Matthews and the EPA, not only where is the sediment coming from, how is it mostly being generated, but also where is it doing the most damage. So that was kind of the outcome of that assessment. So last year we assembled stakeholder groups for 9 categories of land use. We've been meeting on a monthly basis with these stakeholder groups who practice certain land uses to look at how we can reduce sediment loads from those particular land uses. And those land uses in their relative order of sediment contribution in the Mad River are as follows. To no one's surprise, roads, number one, followed by construction, then forestry, then municipal and utility work, aggregate extraction, including pit run, hard rock mining, food and cash crop, agriculture, grazing, recreation, and restoration. It's been a really large undertaking. It's very akin to the Tamales Bay grazing plan, but imagine it for 8 more categories of land use. So it's quite a big undertaking. And these BMPs are being assembled into the Mad River TMDL compliance plan. And a draft of this will be available to your board and your staff in June. What I really want to bring forward is that it's this model of compliance, of having a landowner-generated approach, not only really empowers the landowners to keep practicing the stewardship that they are, but it represents a huge benefit and a potential reduction in workload for your staff to have this coming out of stakeholder groups in the watersheds rather than being sort of top down from the board. And so we hope that this plan will be of huge utility to not only to the stakeholders in Mad River, but to other Northern California watersheds that have similar land uses. So that will be coming before you at some point for some level of approval. So I just wanted to give you a heads up. And I want to finish my 3 minutes here with an invitation. We're hosting with the Blue Lake Rancheria a 2-day symposium on the Mad River on July 29th and July 30th. We'll be talking in detail about the assessment, about the TMDL compliance plan, and having a number of poster sessions and other sessions on all things germane to the Mad River watershed. And we'll be sending a flyer around, but I wanted to be sure you've got penciled that into your calendars for July 29th and 30th. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Craig. Good morning, Charles.
Good morning. Chuck Ciancio, Cutton resident. After a little wine and a night's sleep, I had some things that came up I thought worth discussing this morning. And in hearing you folks talk, I wrote down a couple other things. One of the things I think we all learned yesterday was we have to kind of let site-specific facts overcome ideology and some prescriptions. And I hope that's the lesson we got the other day, because I see a lot of folks. I don't think everybody understands, and I get laughed at when I say this, but you're the most powerful agency on the North Coast. You control anything to do with water down to a mud puddle. And I think the timber folks have finally got that through. I mean, you've been hammering on them for years. You got the cattlemen and the dairymen are here today. And funding and staff limitations have kind of held this in check, I mean, from my perspective. So you might want to keep that in mind. This is all coming down the pike, and everybody needs to understand that. So yesterday was one of the things that kind of brought all this up. Today, those are kind of my notes. And one quick comment, and then I'll get into the quick thing I handed you. I've given you a couple of handouts. One of the things is it seems like the use of the land, timber harvesting, dairy, has kind of been brainwashed. Everybody's kind of brainwashed to look at the bad side. And it's not just economics on the good side. There's a lot of wildlife, a lot of diversity, and a lot of things going on out there that I don't think folks understand. And that's why I talk about site-specific. You get on the ground and take a real good look. And I think you folks, and we even us, have got a lot to learn about sedimentation and some other things. So getting into what I've written down, one quick thing I noticed was the planning supervisor or commissioner mentioned the Arcata Marsh, and there's a regulatory problem going on with the permit over there. And so I perked up on that. I researched it a little bit, and talking with Mr. Driscoll from Thompson's office yesterday, it comes down apparently to a federal definition of what a bay is and what's included in a bay. And the bay is doing great, everything's fine, but we're still having a problem getting the permit out there. And you folks need to take a look at the site-specific situation. And one of the things I'll throw out here, your staff's overloaded, stop worrying about non-problems. Get around them. Move on. And that one has a non-problem. And then yesterday, just to wrap up what we kind of covered yesterday, there was one point that was not made that during the trip that didn't come out. I'm getting older and I'm factually driven, you know, try to get my biases, put them aside. Historically, on NTMPs, you will not find in your files or the CDF files many problems. So a question was asked, why are we cherry picking and only showing you the best? Well, the problem is they're all kind of good. So take a look, take a hard look at what's going on and the record and the factual record, and you'll find there's a reason to do the waiver and to continue it. And all these open space folks are having a lot of problems hanging on in California, and if you can make it simpler for them and less costly, you're going to have a lot more of them hang around. And then just wrapping things up, you can read what I got here. Kind of tongue-in-cheek, I wrote a thought about yesterday about how to get beyond some of that stuff. I think you're duplicating what's already done. It's a lot of extra cost. But there is a way, the fish and game. We worked with the fish and game on our coho thing, and we got around it, costly, simply. And just take a look at that. And I hope you don't do it, but if you got to do it, there's one way to do it. So thank you.
Thank you. Felice Pace.
My name is Felice Pace. I am the water chair on the North Group of the Sierra Club and speak in that capacity. I wasn't able to go with you all yesterday because I do this as a volunteer and I just couldn't take the time. I would have liked to because I worked on forestry for many years. And 25 years ago, I was on a board of forestry committee that was trying to get the Board of Forestry rules, the forest practice rules, certified as best management practices. That did not happen, and it has not happened because the Board of Forestry refused what EPA requires and what the Forest Service, for example, does, which is a BMP monitoring program that has integrity. So the Board of Forestry rules, what you need to do with these folks like this last gentleman is send them to the Board of Forestry. All you guys need to do is get those rules, and I think our executive officer could confirm this. If the rules were certified as best management practices, well, then, you know, we could accept them. So I think these folks are barking at the wrong door. We cannot recover our coastal watersheds And these TMDLs will not work unless the NTMP people are part of that. And that doesn't mean just, you know, take our word for it. That means compliance monitoring as required. And I really wanted to talk about the meetings in Fort Jones because I spent a couple days out there as a volunteer going to those meetings. And that's what I intended to talk to you about this morning. Because EPIC, Klamath Forest Alliance, and the North Group Sierra Club had, and the Sierra Club Redwood Chapter, had a meeting with staff, Kat, and a couple other staff members on Tuesday about TMDL implementation, because our whole community that did the TMDLs, we've invested a tremendous amount in this. I represented a group on the lawsuit that got this going, and we've been with it all the way through. And now we're at a critical stage, which is implementation. And it all goes for nothing unless implementation actually gets it done. And yes, with forestry, we've made a lot of progress. We don't want to go backwards with this NTMP thing. Then the industrial guys are going to want to go backwards. Why not us? And you know, all that your staff has done can be lost if that's the way that you choose to go, and it'll put us back into a lot of conflict as well. But the greatest concern is holding the line there on forestry, but also ag, because we're not there on ag. There is not effective yet in our region regulation of agriculture. And here in our basins, most of our basins, just like all over the country, ag and urban runoff are the big issues we still have to deal with. So, you know, one of the things is we need these performance criteria. We're going to be making specific recommendations on the SCOT. But what was heard out there, there was not one report that you heard that was something done in response to the waiver, because the waiver is like totally voluntary. Nobody's done anything under the waiver. Those are all things that have been done under restoration programs back in the past, and some of them continuing, in one case, people on their own without any funding. So, you know, I'm from there, so I know. We really need public education, and I'm going to recommend in the triennial review that become one of the priorities, because we have to educate our communities about the need and the justification for non-point regulation. And with these TMDL implementation plans, we're going to be pushing to comply with Water Code Section 13242. Got copies of it for you, just so you can take home one. I'll rely on the chair or somebody, the executive officer, to hand them out. You know, I want to keep it by my bed, so from now on. So anyway, we're going to be working with staff really intensely, our TMDL community, Allen, Coast Action Group, the groups down south. We're all united on this. And I may be coordinating that effort, actually. So we really need to make this work, and it's going to take very specific performance criteria and monitoring in compliance with the way it's a very good water code section. So that's all I got.
Thanks, Lucia. Next question.
Thank you for indulging the time.
All right. Next card is Armand Denny with Christy Wrigley.
Unfortunately, Armand couldn't make it because he's detained at work. And my neighbor Chrissy was supposed to be here, but she's very sick right now. She got sick last night. So unfortunately, I'm it. So first I'll say what I have to say, and then we'll discuss the papers. The papers are loosely arranged in such a way that the first three pertain to a THP right next to us. The next are some two are general pictures of Elk River, where we live. The next three are the rainfall associated with the floods. And the last 8.5 by 11 pictures are pictures of the flood in December on our property, and it's a lot after it's gone down. The 8.5 by 11s are just historical aerial perspectives, and the very last picture is a historical aerial perspective of Elk River, of the farm, and where this THP is in the mid-50s. Just kind of an interesting one, and gives you a perspective. So, dear board members, it has been 5 years since the WDRs and the so-called Tier 2 zero sediment logging was put in place through a very flawed public process. We, the affected residents of Elk River and Freshwater, worked with Water Quality, CDF, now called CAL FIRE, and any other public and private agency we could over an 8-year time frame, and when the actual hearing took place, the residents had 11 minutes of testimony. We were drowned out by many other voices. And at the last minute, zero sediment logging was announced. It is just a fantasy, a way to play fast and clever with the allowed logging acreages to get even more acres of logging. Mother Nature does not follow those formulas exactly, and surely is not going to be confined by our silly calculations. It has been 5 years, and conditions have steadily worsened for the residents. The destruction is complete, and my unapple farm, as I call it now, last year I got 15 pounds of apples total. Beside the extremely poor orchard condition, the bear and deer come in and eat everything. I cannot begin to maintain any kind of fence when the orchard floods 3/4 or half to all the way across every year. Every single year I can count on that happening. My other family home is completely unrentable. It floods every 3 years. The last people moved out because it flooded twice, and no one wants to move in because of the mold. I've tried. And the fact that they'll just get flooded again. Recent flood years are 202, 203, the 205, 206, the 208, and now the 210 and 211. Shall we take bets when it's coming next? We have huge deposits of silt this past year, even more than in recent previous years. Tier 2 logging is contributing to this. There is no such thing as zero sediment discharge logging in reality. Defining the only silt that counts as that which comes from landslides when the plan within the plan doesn't cure the problem for the residents who receive all of the harm, none of the benefits. We wonder why our lives and livelihoods are not worth protecting. Why is our health and safety not important? That's the government's prime job, to protect its citizens. Why is our upstream neighbor allowed such favoritism? The river floods on ever smaller rainfall. Emergency vehicles won't go through the water. We're an aging population, and access to emergency health care is more critical to us all the time, as evidenced by today. The sediment carrying capacity of the river is extremely overburdened. Adding more sediment just results in ever more deposition. It's already beyond its capacity. The recent Salmon Forever report by Jack Lewis and I think Randy Klein bears this out. This report deals with suspended sediment delivery to Elk River and Freshwater, and Adona does have a copy of it. There may be less sediment going into the system at times, but the system is so overburdened that it doesn't make a meaningful difference to us. Logging is messy, and it creates sediment. You can put all kinds of measures in place, and they may help, but not enough. Suspended sediment is a huge problem in Elk River. Buffers don't stop that kind of sediment. You cannot keep doing more and better logging to cure the problems created by past logging. The Moss Elk Plan, as seen on the first page of your handout, is a real nightmare for the residents on Elk River. The sediment, and there will be lots, whether we account for it or not with our fancy formulas, will flow down into the river directly above my farm, or it will come in from the back across the north side of my property and flood the ditch my neighbor just cleaned out last year. Then it will dump into the river where four of my neighbors have their domestic intake. And it also makes complete. Now, I will be receiving sediment on 360 degrees of my property from the upstream logging by my neighbor. Yes, we have expensive, complicated water systems provided by MaxAMPL, but stressing the system is certainly not a good action. My neighbor Ralph Krause and I have timber which abuts this plan. I've asked HRC to wait until Ralph and I log so that the whole area can be logged at one time, probably be about 30 acres. However, this unit should not be logged until after the TMDL is completed. Unit 1 and 2 of the Moss Plan are some of the only treed areas left. See page 3 of the handout, and they have any ability to stop the sediment from reaching the river, our ditches and fields. They are a big part of what little forest protection is left. Unit 1 is on a rather steep terrain. See page 2. Logging in this area always deranges the flow of water on our property below, endangering the road because water flows under the road, not through the culvert, then threatens my neighbor's property and home, and when it overflows the shallow ditch on my property right next to hers, it threatens her home, and she is the one that is now sick and not able to come in, and that's Chris Pasteras. HRC's unwillingness to wait for a better time to log seems almost retaliatory to those of us living there. There may be only 14 acres in Unit 1 and 10, and 10 in Unit 2, which might not sound like a lot, but the area is so strategically located that logging them would cause us immediate, irreversible harm. Six of my neighbors, and there are only 12 of us, households on Wrigley Road, ask that this logging plan unit not be approved because conditions are so bad. We need the board to protect our property and water supply by rescinding the just received approval of Unit 1 and then do not approve Unit 2, which is up for Tier 2 approval, until after the TMDL, after we understand the problem, and the resident perspective is given more emphasis. Please take our needs seriously. It has us very upset. All Tier 2 logging needs to be stopped. We've endured 5 years of this experiment. We are not getting better with Tier 2 logging. It has just been a method to add more logging acreages to the allowed quota and not count the sediment, at least not count it on paper. We, the residents of Elk River, also need a joint meeting with two representatives of the Water Board and the Board of Forestry to tour our property to see what we live with or without, as the case may be. Not a meeting orchestrated by the timber interest. We need just an on-the-ground tour of resident lands and circumstances. It needs to be about the residents. We need to know why our lives and livelihoods, our homes and historical businesses, our health and safety are not worth protecting. I have already asked your staff to help facilitate such an event. Please help us accomplish these necessary actions. One, stop Unit 1 and 2 of the Moss Plan from being logged right now. It's not a forever thing. I've waited 15 years to do anything about being able to farm on my property, and I have no resolution and no vision of that in the future. So it's not like I'm asking them for anything more than I've already given up. Stop Tier 2 logging in Elk River watershed till conditions are improved, and it's warranted. And facilitate a joint tour of water quality in the Board of Forestry and the Elk River resident situation. So thank you. I'm really open to questions. I can go over these handouts if you have questions. And of course, I have, unfortunately, a very broad understanding of what's going on for us. So.
Thank you, Christy. Thanks for the information packet as well. Appreciate that.
Mr. Chair.
Mr. Norin.
For one, thank you for coming, Christy. I want to amend, actually, my disclosure this morning. I forgot to mention, I don't know how I did this, but I forgot.
I almost corrected you.
I stand.
I was going to say, oh, there we are. We don't count again.
Well, let me make sure it does count, because I spent yesterday, along with staff, looking at your property and the Elk River watershed. Forgot to disclose that, so please amend that within the record. And I want to thank you for showing me your property. Let me just be clear here, again, just because I'm looking at the information you have. Unit 1, 14-acre unit, is that the one that abuts the piece that you want to log as well, that you're
yes.
saying? And again, Christy, just to be clear,
yes.
You're talking about doing logging in this area as well. So you're talking about doing something in conjunction with this area as well, with Unit 1. Is that and your neighbor?
Yes. I hope to get an NTMP. I have made steps towards that. I've spent $6,000, but I ran out of money. And I don't have access to my money until 2012. But, yeah, I have always had the intent of getting an NTMP, of which that will be one unit. It is historically logged by us. It was logged in the 60s, and it was actually a lot experimentally logged, and they took a lot of the information up at Humboldt. I don't know if they still have it. And
what type of time frame are you talking about? If you're asking for a pause on that, then and I just would ask, have you thought about that kind of horizon?
I have. 10 years might be a good number of years to aim for. But I think also on top of that is looking at sediment in our watershed as it affects us in relationship to the picture of the TMDL. And so I think that aspects of the TMDL may reflect on where logging may affect us more than other areas. So time frame may be affected by that aspect of the TMDL.
Okay. And I readily admit that it is clearly apparent within this watershed of the effects of sediment. And my understanding is in spending time there yesterday and in talking with staff is that we have an update on the Elk TMDL coming, and I believe it's for June, our June meeting, which I think will be informative about where that's at, where it's going, and allow this board to make some direction to staff about. I think it's very timely that this aligns now. I know it's been a long time. I've been here for a couple of years, and now it's coming. So, and you've actually lived through this quite a long time. So,
yeah.
Okay.
I'd like to point out that you spent probably an hour and a half. Not when you said yesterday, it makes it sound like you spent the whole day.
Apologize.
So I'd like to make sure that the audience understand it wasn't. Although we could spend all day, the whole board could. And I'd like to point out, we can't wait until next week or next year on the units on this plan. If they will log them just as soon as they can. And it is so detrimental to our lives out there that it is extremely important that we not wait until the TMDL update is out, at least on units 1 and 2. On the Tier 2 logging, I can understand that.
Mr. Chair, may I make a suggestion that my understanding is, and I did see the letter approving these at least Unit 1. I believe it's Unit 1 has been approved. Is that correct? And Unit 2 is approved or in the queue? Okay. May I make a suggestion? I would like to take a look at that and see where that is and how that lines out with what's on the ground, what's in process, and what's in play.
Okay.
And I'd like
That's
to
fine.
Suggest that we do that.
To look at it.
Okay.
And also, in light of the Salmon Forever report in 2000, it's the 2008 report, and I have to say that we are on time with the 2011 report, but the 9 and 10 were when we had budget crisis and the money was withheld from contracting, and there was no way I could do all that work myself, and that's exactly what it amounted to. And we do have those samples. We were able to check them all in, and we're now exploring a way to organic matter, to get rid of the organic matter. And we're working with Jack Lewis, who worked for RSL, and another lady, Debbie Visser, who is also an ex-RSL member. But the 2011 report, hopefully, will give us a good comparison from 2008 to 2011, and so it should have some very useful information in it. And right now what the report is indicating is that there may be less sediment going into the system, but there is not less deposition, and the effects are even worse. I mean, we started out with about 16 inches of that post being shown, and now what are there, maybe 5?
And by the way, Christy, that Salmon Forever report that you're alluding to, that's on the web?
I don't think that it's on the web. I'm not sure. It's through RCAA, and okay. Craig Benson may be more knowledgeable in that respect, but I know we did give a copy of it to Adona, and if you are desperate, I have a copy on CD that I could give you.
I'll just pursue it through Adona.
Okay.
Yeah, thank you.
But I do have a CD that I could
give
you.
Okay, appreciate that.
So.
Thanks, Christy.
Thank you.
Thanks. Thank you.
So the last I had for speaker cards. Was there anybody else that had anything that they wanted to add, or Mr. Schultz, you may.
Good morning, Chairman Hale, board members, staff. My name's Tom Schultz. I'm the Forest Operations Manager for Humboldt Redwood Company, located in Scotia. Today with me is John Westner, who is our area manager and is directly responsible for the areas there of the area of the track there, of which THP 1-08-72 HUM is located. And I'd just like to spend a few minutes reviewing with you a few facts regarding the history of the timber harvest plan that's in question. In May of 2008, the THP was submitted by Pacific Lumber Company and filed by Cal Fire. As submitted by PALCO, the THP called for clear cutting and shelterwood removal silviculture. In June of 2008, a pre-harvest inspection was held. Water Board staff attended a PHI and prepared PHI report. The Water Board staff recommended removal of the winter tractor yarding, and the RPF agreed. In November of 2008, the change of ownership went from PALCO to Humboldt Redwood Company. Humboldt Redwood Company amended the plan to change the silviculture from clear cut and shelterwood removal to group selection. In 2009, HRC proposed to harvest units 1 and 2 as Tier 1 and units 3 and 4 as Tier 2. After many discussions, HRC agreed not to enroll units 1 and 2 to allow for more dialogue between concerned neighbors and the Water Board staff. In December of 2010, HRC proposed to enroll units 1 as Tier 1 and unit 2 as Tier 2 for harvest in 2011. May of this year, the Water Board enrolled Unit 1 with additional conditions. Those conditions were a change in silviculture from group selection to a single tree selection, treatment of all bare mineral soil within the unit, winter operations restrictions, which had already been agreed to, an increase in the Class 2 stream buffer for a no-cut from 10 feet to 40 feet, and extend all equipment exclusion zones to 100 feet. There was also a request to allow others to tour the harvest area. HRC has an open door policy allowing for interested parties to tour with HRC staff and any area of the ownership that concerns them. In the spring of 2010, several neighbors from the Elk River area were given a tour of the Elk River watershed operations. Recently, two other HRC staff members and I toured two of the 10 sites that HRC is currently required by the Water Board to perform routine maintenance. These are 10 properties that by order that HRC, previously with Palco, is required to go ahead and maintain the water systems. We reviewed the river intakes, the rainfall catchment systems, the tanks, the filters, the water treatment systems. We are aware of the issues and the problems that these landowners will have with sustaining necessary domestic water sources. As you can see, a great amount of review, deliberation, modification has occurred to this plan, and we agree with the Water Board staff that, as mitigated, the plan will protect water quality. Thank you. If you would like to go ahead and review the plan on the ground, we'd be happy to go ahead and accommodate you. We're hoping to go ahead and start operations sometime in June, if that would go ahead and work prior to that would work for you. Or if you had another date there, we'd be happy to go ahead and help accommodate that.
Thank you, Tom. Let me work through a process and go through Cat Coleman and our staff and get back to you, okay, if that would be acceptable.
All right.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Do I have any others on non-agenda items? Okay, with that, I will close our public comment period.